Hello, and welcome to the Cyber Sisters podcast. We're your Cyber Sisters, Allison and Emily, two cyber educators talking about edtech pedagogy, and this week, Nearpod. So, Emily, I cannot tell you how happy I am that we are finally doing a Nearpod episode. And I cannot believe it took us to season three to actually do an entire episode dedicated to this thing that I know that you and I both love so much.
We've talked about it like every season. I think part of it was because we were like, who would we bring on as an expert? Because we're both pretty much experts.
Yes, in fact, we are both Nearpod pioneers. And since, Emily, you got me involved with this program, do you want to talk a little bit about what it is to be a Nearpod pioneer?
I can. I actually pulled up the website. So this is the specific description. It says Nearpod pioneers are influencers in the edtech community who represent Nearpod through speaking engagements at regional and national conferences, thought leaders, and advocacy. I don't know if that necessarily describes us completely, but that's the official definition on their website. But we both did start as Nearpod certified educators, which pretty much everyone can do. You can attend one of their trainings, and then you just make a Nearpod with some specific requirements, which honestly is just good teaching, so you're probably going to do it anyway. And then you fill out some questions, some about you, your bio, things like that, and then submit the form. You get some extra PD, you get some pretty cool swag, and then you get access to some special things. There are tons of reasons that I love the Pioneer program. Once you're an NCE, a certified educator, then you can apply to become a Pioneer. I really love the Pioneer program. We get access to things early. Things like that. So pretty cool program to be in.
No, completely agree. And you also get access to the Facebook group, which yes, I truly think is one of the best resources because you get to see a variety of other like really high quality educators. What are they doing with the platform? It's a great place to ask questions. I know a couple of times when I have wanted to try something, but I wasn't sure how to do it. It's a great place to do crowdsourcing of information. So I think it's a really, really awesome thing. You sort of get to be a part of the conversation. I will say that one of the things I've always loved about Nearpod is that they are really dedicated to listening to teachers. So I can't tell you how many times Emily and I have, you know, sent feedback. Literally when we've been in conferences, we've had, you know, private closed door meetings with, you know, representatives from the company about how we're using it in the class, what features do we want to see, how, you know, what things are working, what things aren't. And we've seen those things actually show up in the program. So it's really, really great. We, you know, couldn't speak more highly of it. So why don't we start actually, now that we've sort of talked a little bit about, you know, sort of all the benefits of using Nearpod, what Nearpod actually is. So Nearpod is basically just like an interactive slide deck is the way that I, you know, describe it to people. It's sort of similar to a Pear Deck, if that's something, you know, that you're more familiar with in your school. If your district has purchased the district version, your students have access to like student accounts. And this is really nice because students can start the interactive slides, stop in the middle and, you know, finish them up for homework or something like that. But otherwise, and I actually, part of the reason that I have always really loved Nearpod is that you don't need usernames and passwords to get in. You don't need an email address, right? Like you don't need this information. Students can just sign in essentially as a guest user. And that's usually how I have my students log in every single day with their, you know, preferred name or nickname. And if they pick one that is not particularly appropriate, I know that this is sometimes an issue, you can boot them out, you know, and sort of force them to use a better, more appropriate name if they've decided to do something maybe colorful or inappropriate for school.
And along those lines, if they do choose to do that and make the wrong decision, none of the other students see their name, which is another feature that I like. And really quickly, just adding before we go any further, Allison didn't want to interrupt you, but just had this thought. Nearpod is something that is freemium. So There is a free version, which we're going to talk about a little bit more. But as you're listening, you're like, oh, I don't have any money to spend, or I really want to try this, but I don't know if my district will get on board. There is a free version. So don't get too discouraged 2 minutes into the episode.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I should have said that from the outset. That was you absolutely interrupt me with that stuff, Emily. Yes, there's different tiers of this program. And Emily is actually going to walk you through what the differences are. And they're not major differences. When we are talking to educators often in the we don't have a ton of money. What are the products that like we can get the most bang for our buck with? Nearpod is always one of the ones that's at the top of our list because it truly is a bang for your buck kind of program. It does have integration with Google Classroom and Teams as well, which I know is really important for a lot of districts. And we use it every day in our own classrooms. So one of the reasons that I personally really love Nearpod, in addition to all of the other flexibilities with a student sign-in and all of this, sort of stuff on the front end that really matters for user experience, is the fact that you can set these slides to either be student-paced, teacher-paced, or a combination of both. I'm going to show you an example at the very end of our episode of one of the ways that I use the flexibility of doing a teacher-led session and then a student-led piece sort of in the middle. But this is really nice because you can use the slides to actually in real time with your students sort of give a presentation. You can show the results of a poll or show the results of something that students wrote or share experiences all together. Or you can have the students working at their own pace through the different materials or through the different slides. A lot of the different slides are the things that you would expect to find in an interactive slide deck. So there's quizzes, there's open-ended questions, there's drawings, right? You can set a background to what they're drawing if you want them to, for example, annotate a text or if you want them to draw on a map or something like that. There is a collaborate board that is kind of almost like a Padlet kind of situation where students are able to share different ideas and they'll sort of pop up on the screen for students. You do have the ability to approve what gets posted to the other students as well, which is also very, very good for a variety of reasons. But there's also some stuff that I think is more interesting and innovative. They've done a lot of integration with games. They have this one Time to Climb, which changes a little bit seasonally, and my students really love. There's drag and drop that I know Emily is going to talk about. She uses it a lot in her civics class. There's interactive FET simulations, which we do not use often, but have been really great for the science team because, there are all sorts of different animations that show different scientific concepts. There's even VR goggles, which I know has been a big one for Emily, especially in the past when you were teaching ancient history. But one of the things that I love is that you can bring in web pages. So you can actually sort of put a link in and that page of the slide will be the web page that you put the link in for. This is great because if you already have certain materials that you like to use, if there's a website that you want a student to explore, if there's a Google form that you want them to fill out, if there's a Google Doc, or in my case, a textbook, a virtual digital textbook, if I want them, the students to, read a story or read a page of something and then go do something on the next page. And you don't have what I have called in this podcast before, the Russian doll of links problem, which is the more links that you have going to different places. We open a Nearpod and you have a link that takes them to someplace else that has another link. Every time students have to click on a link, you lose a certain number of students who miss that they needed to click on a link. So this, it's all one place. You can pull everything in. It's very, very convenient and comprehensive. And I found it to be a really, really great tool in our cyber pedagogy. So Emily, what are some of the differences between the free and the paid versions of this particular platform?
Yeah, so there's really not a ton of differences, which as someone who has done their fair share of free versions in the past of things, I really appreciate. Someone once told me a teacher's favorite F word is free. Yes. And Nearpod definitely has a really robust free version, which I appreciate. The biggest difference is the size. So with the paid version of Nearpod, you definitely get a lot more storage. Your storage in Nearpod with the free version is pretty limited. And there are some other ways around it. So you could like make your base lesson in PowerPoint or Google Slides and then import it in. And when you're done, you can just delete it, or like there's a ton of workarounds for it. But that's the biggest difference, is the amount of storage space that you get in your library. There are a few features that you don't get. So just so you know, when we start talking about them later in the podcast, drag and drop is one of the newest features that they released that you don't get with the free version. We are going to be talking a little bit about switching from a live lesson to the student paste version that it within your live lesson. That is one of the features that you don't get with the free version. I actually think, that's only released for even district accounts. So they do have, Nearpod has three different plans. The silver version, which is free, gold, platinum, and then school and district. School and district is the only one who can get the live to student paste. We're also going to talk a little bit about co-teaching in a little bit. I know Allison loves co-teaching.
I do.
I actually like it too. Not quite as much because I don't have a daily co-teacher like Allison does. Because it's not like, it's not something I use necessarily daily because I don't always have another adult in my room. That is another feature that is only for districts. Student accounts, which is brand new, and we're all trying to like figure it out completely. That is also only for districts. You can also do rostering with Clever and ClassLink to get those district accounts working. And for your teachers, that's only with districts. You can have some shared libraries too. Obviously, that is only for schools and districts, because if you're on your own with a silver account, who would you share your lessons with? So that's the biggest difference for a day-to-day teacher user. Biggest difference between free and the paid account is the storage space and the drag and drop. But even without having those couple extra features, the free version is very robust. It still has, and I'm going to point this out because this is something that I know we have talked between like the teachers at our school, and Allison and I have talked extensively about. A lot of the products for their free version have issues with FERPA and COPPA.
Yes.
And Nearpod is one that their free version, their privacy policies are exactly the same for the free and the paid version. So that is not something that you need to worry about at all. And I just thought that was really important to be able to point that out.
No, that's a huge one, Emily. That's a huge one.
Yeah. So, Allison, mm-hmm. Let's talk about what this looks like in your classroom. And I'm going to, I know that for the longest time, I was using live participation lessons all the time. And Allison was like, why would you use live participation?
I was.
I just use it for student pace. And I'm like, Allison, you need to use this live participation. So I know I finally got you on board with that.
I have been converted, truly converted. So part of it was the introduction of Actively Learn into my life. My other true great ed tech love, right? It's like Nearpod and Actively Learn, between the two of them, they're just like a perfect combination. So I used to, before I had access to Actively Learn, use this as my way to make interactive texts when students were reading. So as you guys sort of know, who have been listening to the podcast for a long time, I teach in a co-taught classroom, and many of my students, not all, but many of them are operating a few years below grade level. And so when you're looking at trying to make texts that are, you know, accessible on that grade level, you know, just sort of handing them my digital textbook and saying, okay, go ahead and read, isn't really going to work. So this was a really great way for me to both make sure that I was creating an interactive guided reading experience, especially for that first draft read, the first time that they go through the text, but I could also level it. For years, I basically would have students, you know, reading something on, you know, the page, and then they could, you know, take a quiz question. And if it was student paced, it would say right away, did you get the correct answer or not? So they would know, you know, there's a comprehension issue. You know, they could fill out a graphic organizer, take notes as they were going through, highlight something as they were going through. But I could put pictures of different things for them to interact with. We're literally about to do the Gift of the Magi in our, you know, school classroom right now. And one of the things that I always wanted to show students was what is the chain to a pocket watch actually look like, and what is a pocket watch, right? Because many of them struggled with, like, why is she buying him a chain? Is it a necklace? You know, showing them what those things looked like was really, really helpful. And I could have two versions. So I might have one where, you know, students were, you know, reading, you know, embedding that, you know, page to the digital textbook. But maybe for my students who really, really struggled, there's a read aloud, there's a dyslexia thing that you can turn on to help, you know, parse the words in a way that's a little bit easier to see, a little bit easier to read. And so all of those accommodations could be there. I could have in the lower level version, maybe certain vocabulary words either changed or highlighted with definitions right in there. And so it really made it for a scaffolded reading experience. And that's how I used it for years, is the first time through a student read a text, we would use that version. I would look and see what did that data tell me about how they were doing. And then we would move on to the whatever lessons we were going to do. Now I use that with Actively Learn. But if for some reason, you know, that's not an option for you, or you're looking for even more differentiation, for example, we use the free version at our school. And so I can't make differentiated groups in quite the same way as I would sometimes like to. This is a really good way to do differentiated groups, because all I would need to do is, you know, click duplicate on the Nearpod, make my changes, and everything is saved. And everybody gets a link, but nobody necessarily knows that they're getting different links, right? They all knew that they just had to complete the assignment. So that's how I used it for years and years and years. Now, I have been converted to sort of Emily's way of thinking, which is I use this as my regular slides every single day. I don't think I've made a lesson plan and a PowerPoint in like a year and a half. I pretty much exclusively use Nearpod, and here's why. So I can make it in sort of some base lesson materials, for example, an explanation or a picture or something like that. I can make that in Google Slides. And then there's add-ons where you can add in all of the different features that the Nearpod has. I have found that Nearpod is actually great for generating class discussions, for interactive participation with the student. We can see in real time when you have students that are logged in, so you can see if they've moved off that browser tab, which is really, really good for monitoring in a cyber environment. And what I usually do is I will screen share a student a copy of the lesson. So I'll open up the teacher lesson, and then I will screen share just a student version in another browser tab so that the students can follow along with my Nearpod on the screen in their own Nearpod. So I can point to things or tell them how to do something or give them specific instructions. You could also do this with screenshots. If for some reason our platform allows you to share just one browser tab, and that way you as the teacher can be jumping back and forth between that student version that the students are seeing and then a teacher version in another tab for monitoring. Screenshots work just as well if you just sort of want to sort of have a student follow along with you. You could also technically share your teacher version if you click a button that makes everything sort of anonymous. So students could see participation coming in real time, but what they wouldn't be able to see is like student names or things like that if you didn't want them to see that. So I use this for my everyday lessons. It creates really great places for students to interact, to generate discussion. And I especially think it also keeps students really accountable, because sometimes when you're in virtual classroom spaces, right, when you're in something that's like a Teams or a Google Meet or Skypes or, you know, whatever the cool ones are that, you know, the kids are using these days, Zooms, I think are very popular still in these sort of settings. I think that the tools that they have available, polls and chat boxes and all this kind of stuff, are really kind of limited in what you can do. And I think Emily and I used to spend a ton of time trying to think about how can we get students to do this thing in our cyber classroom. And oftentimes we had to give links to another space to do something, or, you know, students had to do something on another tab and then come back to the classroom. And that navigating is just like a lot. I like being able to, at the beginning of the class, everybody logs in. I can see who, you know, did and didn't log in. Because of the co-teaching setting, my co-teacher can also see who did and didn't log in. And depending on who's leading the lesson that day, you know, we can pull students who didn't log in and sort of help motivate them to get inside. But then from the student's perspective, this is an entirely personal lesson, right? When that drag and drop comes up on their screen, or that, you know, draw it slide comes up on their screen, or their, you know, quiz thing shows up on their screen, what they see is their assignment filling the whole screen. And I think it has more of a, you know, easy to participate vibe, right? Because it feels a little bit more like a video game, or a little bit more like a program that is specifically made for them. They can see what they picked. And then I can push out student examples. I can push out, you know, this was your answer and this is how the whole class did. So it allows, I think, for a more individualized feeling on the student's side, because they're not seeing all of the class typing in a chat box, or all of the class pointing on the board, or all of the class, you know, putting up a poll. They see their interaction. And then I can choose the times that I want to bring in data from the rest of the class, or times that I want to sort of keep that away. And I do think that that is really, really helpful just on the accountability front. It's something about that user experience. I mentioned the sort of importance of those co-teaching links. So you get a teacher link that allows you to see what your students are doing in real time. This is especially helpful on those like drawing things. So as students are maybe filling out a graphic organizer, we're doing a lot of plot diagrams right now. So I can see students, all of my students on one screen, how they're filling in the plot diagram, which might allow me to, you know, say something like, oh, okay, I noticed that, like, you know, these two students haven't started yet or are really off track. Let's pull them into a room while the class is working, and sort of help get them back on track in some kind of way. But we also get a lot of PCAs, personal care assistants, IAs, BSCs, things like that coming into our class, and we can give them the link so that they can monitor their particular student, even walkthroughs. I know I had a walkthrough a little while ago from one of my vice principals, and I was able to say, here's the link. You can see what the students are doing. You can really look in on their world in real time and see the kind of data that I'm seeing, and it's all saved. And girl, let me tell you the benefit of having a program that saves all of that data, exports yes. easily to, you know, the programs that I need it to export to, because then I have that high quality data saved for IEP meetings, for parent teacher conferences, for just trying to track over time how are my students doing with a particular skill. I can see all of that information from every single actual class period, and that is such valuable data that I don't necessarily get if I'm doing it outside of the platform. So for me, this is now sort of like what I teach in days that students are not doing work and actively learn. I pretty much just rotate between the two of them, but it's a fabulous resource, and I have a lot of good and positive feelings about it, obviously. How about you, Emily? I feel like I took a lot of the important things, but how else are you using it in your class?
One thing that I can do is when we, and I think we both do this actually, when I've done a lesson in class, I will then take the student PACE link for the same exact lesson and I'll put it in my course. So then yes. If a kid is absent, if they want to, they just want to review, yeah. They can access it later whenever they want, and as many times as they want. So that has been really powerful. Like you, I do live participation most of the time. But I do it for asynchronous days.
That's a good one
so
too.
Anytime that I don't have class for whatever reason, whether it's a scheduled async day, whether I am absent, I do it for async days. I also had the idea while you were talking. In the show notes, we're going to put a ton of resources in the show notes. I will link like the whole chart for comparing the different plans. I'll link that in there. But Nearpod has a blog that has a ton of useful information on it. They have a specific blog post for Nearpod updates that they link every time. So if you're someone who already loves Nearpod and are listening to this, you can check out the update ones. But they have a whole ton of posts about different ways to use it. The current posts are about like incorporating SEL and formative assessment. And there's one about coding, student voice. So I'll link that. And so you can just get some other ideas to use it, how it could look like in your classroom as well. So I'll put that in the resources in the show notes for you if you're interested too.
Absolutely. And I shouldn't say this, but it's really good. I've read a lot of the blog posts and things like that. It's just really good pedagogy. You might get some ideas that might be useful if you are like a Pear Deck user or like doing something in Google Classroom, Google Forms. There's just really good and innovative stuff there. So it's a good thing to check out, even if you're like, I'm a dedicated, some other platform person. We do not discriminate here. You can use any fun to ed tech platforms you're interested in. But there's great discussion, I think, in their resources for sure. So speaking of really great resources and tips and like ways to use Nearpod in innovative ways, we each picked a couple of things that we do in Nearpod that we think are, sort of interesting or things to try if you're an established Nearpod user or if you're, looking for something new to do. So Emily, what are some of the tips that you have come away with, things that you really like to specifically use in your classroom?
Obviously, history teacher. Virtual field trips are my absolute favorite thing.
And describe what those look like, those virtual field trips.
So I love the virtual field trips for a couple reasons. I cannot do virtual reality. Like anything with VR goggles, I cannot do. It makes me feel sick. My mom is the same way. I get it from her. But with having the VR with just the 360 picture on the screen, I can do because you/the student are in control of it. So you click the mouse and move it around. And that really helps because I can move it as slow as I need to move it. And because it's not like completely taking all of my vision, I'm pretty sure that's why I can handle it and not make myself feel sick. And Nearpod has a million of them. Yes. I don't think I have searched for one and not been able to find it. That being said, if you do search for one and can't find it, you can add your own. You can upload your own and use it. But all of that being said, one of my favorite tips with VR, and I have seen people do this for FET simulations as well, is to have students take a screenshot of a virtual field trip and then upload it onto a Drawlet to explain their thinking. So I've had them when we are talking about like Greek architecture and looking for Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian columns, I've had them go on a virtual field trip to Greece and had them look and said, tell them, find an example of a column, pick one, take a screenshot of it, and then on the next slide is a Drawlet, paste your screenshot, and then tell me which column it is and why, how you know that that's our that is the column that you picked. So things like that. The FET simulations are there for science and math. And because it is a simulation, you can't see exactly what they're doing. But I know teachers who have had their students do the simulations, say, take a screenshot. And the FET simulations actually have like a button in the simulation, excuse me, to enable them to take a screenshot. And then next page, post your screenshot and then like answer this question about it. So definitely that's one of my favorite tips because it takes something that is inherently a passive thing and then turns it into something active.
I do something very similar with English a lot of times where when we're talking about like setting for example, a lot of times that's a good way to do it, right? Is to have them use those VRs to sort of, you know, feel what it feels like to be in this space. And then a lot of times what I will do, I know I used to do this with my Globe Theater tour because we did for a long time, All the World's a Stage as one of our, you know, poems that we would talk about. And a tour of the Globe Theater is really helpful in understanding that particular piece, right? So what I would have them do is have them explore, and then on the next page, I would have taken a screenshot that showed particular elements, and then there's a place for you to put notes about, like, you know, annotations, basically, like, what is this making you think about, questions you have, you know, how do you think the people who are feeling, who are sitting here versus sitting here, you know, what do you think those perspectives are like, or things like that. So using, taking screenshots out of there, whether it's you having the students do it, which I think is sort of the better and more active way, or the way that I've done it in the past, which is taking my own screenshots and putting it on the next page for them to annotate or do something with, is a really great way to just take that. I agree, Emily, and make it really active.
Yeah, and with the new drag and drop too, for any other history teachers, I try to like use history examples because I feel like we get ignored a lot in examples.
The untested subject. That's
yeah. timelines. Like just dragging events and putting them on a timeline. Obviously, you think of drag and drop. You can do like word sorts and things like that. So many examples for drag and drop. And then the last example, some ways to do it. I use Drawlets a lot for annotating text, especially in social studies classes. We know that if we're looking at primary texts are hard for any grade. They're always too hard. So being able to really like dissect those primary sources using Drawlets, because you can see all of their Drawlets at once. And similar to what Allison was talking about earlier, about being able to like pull kids that are way off on their plot diagrams, you can pull those kids that are way off on their annotations. And to be able to share kids out who are like, this kid is awesome, totally on the right track. And to be able to talk about what they have annotated and why, and highlighting, sometimes I'll have them highlight different things in different colors, just to start to kind of get those ideas out there. Love using Drawlets for annotating texts.
If there was a single most useful feature in Nearpod, it is their Drawlet slides.
Yeah.
It is because of being able to set that background as whatever image you want, you being able to see what they're doing to that image in real time, and then your ability to share with other students that work.
And the other thing I love is when you share it, it doesn't share with a name. So it's correct. Anonymous. And yes. That's the other thing I love, because I've also sometimes shared ones that are wrong to talk about how to fix it.
Right.
And that's another feature I like, is that it doesn't share with a name.
Well, and I think that students learn more from each other's work than they will ever learn from a teacher's example. It's motivating too, right? If I often will give a shout out to students and say, hey, this is an example, you know, this student did really well today. And it may not have even been the student who did the best job, right? It's just a motivating factor that if you do a really good job, yours could be the example that gets shown in class. And students really do read each other's work. This is what another student wrote. And they compare themselves to one another, right? You can use those social dynamics to kind of motivate kids to, you know, give their best effort, right? Like if they feel like theirs is going to be shouted out because they did a good job and they feel like it's attainable, I try to keep a sort of running tab of, you know, who I've shared and who maybe hasn't gotten a chance yet. It really does work. Students care about what other students do a lot more than they care about what teachers do.
Yeah. What are your favorite things?
So there's two things that I really love using. The first one is that collaborate board. So with Padlets, I know you only get a certain amount of them per year. But what's great about the collaborate board is you can have as many of them as you need. But I really like using the collaborate boards because they have this feature where students can like other students' responses. And just like Emily pointed out, you don't see any names. You just see the answer that they put up. So this is really good, for example, a situation where I want the students to generate an idea for me, and then we're going to use that idea in the rest of class. For example, you may have a passage or a story that students have read, and I want us to come up with what we think the theme of that story is. And we can then make different suggestions on the collaborate page, talk about why certain suggestions may, you know, may be good or why suggestions may be bad. And then I can use those like features to say, okay, go ahead as a class and vote for the theme that you liked, right? This is better for me than their polling feature, because with the polling feature, I have to come up with what the potential themes to the story are. I don't want to do that. I want to put the onus on the class to generate those ideas and then for us to come to a consensus on what we're going to use. And then maybe the rest of the activities, you know, filling out a graphic organizer, going back in the story to find evidence to support that theme, all that kind of stuff can be about something that the students actually generated. I also really love using the live to student paced feature to help differentiate sort of activities during the day. So for example, one of the things that we'll often do is do second draft readings, right? So the first draft reading, I always say, is the, you know, the first time through that a student is reading, and, you know, we're getting an idea of who the characters are, what the conflict is, or, you know, what the main idea is of the article, what are, you know, some of the big ideas, right? But if there are gaps in our understanding or a word that we didn't understand or something like that, that's okay, right? This is just the first time through, we're getting our bearings, and the second time through, this is when we're going to go in, you know, really trying to connect big ideas or ask an important question or something like that to guide our reading. So oftentimes I might say to a student, okay, we're going to do a second draft reading today. I want you to reread this passage. And then we're going to ask this question or do these series of activities. I can set it up so that a student can read the passage. And then, you know, maybe there's a question that they have to respond to. And after that, there's a series of activities that come after that are, you know, escalating in depth of knowledge, you know. So it might start with identifying something, comparing, you know, a character's perspective to another character, and then generating, you know, something. So maybe writing from that other character's perspective. And if I set it, you know, even in the middle of a live class, if I suddenly go to student paced, students can be working at all different places, and that's completely fine. I can maybe say, you know, if I'm going to stop this activity when all of the students have completed the first activity or the second activity. But if other students get to the extension activities, that's great, and everybody's getting what they need, and it's not difficult for me to set up. That is always one of the things that I've always struggled with extension activities, I think, especially in the cyber environment, is, you know, the links issue. You make one activity, you know, that's going to take them a certain amount of time. And then, you know, a certain student is really fast. They have to go to a different link and, you know, they see how many links there are. Maybe they try to rush through an activity because they think, well, I want to get to the end of all the links that the teacher has. You know, this way, there's always something sort of for them to be doing and students get what they need. I will also sometimes do this with levels. So for example, with grammar, this is one of my sort of favorite tricks is, you know, looking at different sentences and setting it to student pace. And maybe, you know, they have to annotate like the first sentence or find all the errors. And once they've done that, they've passed, they can go to the next level. And I can say, you know, what level did you get to or something like that. And can use that to track, you know, how students are progressing at a particular skill, right? A student may only get to level 2, you know, at the beginning of the year, but by the end of the year, they're getting to level 5, right? They're able to do all of the different activities during that section that is student paced. And then when that activity is done, you just turn live pace back on and they can, you know, they're live with the rest of the class. And that section that is student paced is bookended, so they can't go on to the rest of your lesson, right? You choose, these are the slides that I want them to be moving through at their own pace. And you can then force them back into that live section. So I love using it for differentiation and for leveling things and allowing students to sort of move through something and for me to be able to track how quickly they're able to move or how far they're able to get, but also for students to be able to see that and understand that in real time, I think is really, really valuable. So if you are looking for other great ideas about how to use Nearpod, I know that coming up, I know this is very, very soon after the release of this particular podcast, there is something called Camp Engage, which Emily, I know you know a ton about, that might be a great thing for you to check out. So do you want to talk about that a little bit here, Em?
So Camp Engage is November 18th to 21st. It is, I'm pulling up the agenda here. So that
going to be presenting.
That is a Thursday to a Sunday. Yeah, Thursday to a Sunday. So the Thursday and Friday sessions are after school. That is Eastern time after school. So it starts at 5:30 on Thursday. And then the Friday sessions also start at 5. They start at 5. It's a free thing. You can register. Definitely check it out. If you can't make the, if you're like, oh, this sounds good, everything is recorded. So you can come check the sessions out later. I am presenting a session on Saturday, I believe is where my session is. But they're always good sessions.
And it's a virtual conference, right,
Anna? Yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, very important. So you can do it from the comfort of your own home, which is yes, always more comfortable. So obviously Nearpod is something that we really like, we really enjoy using. And so if there are any questions that sort of you guys have as listeners about this particular platform, we are going to be doing some other episodes coming up this season where we're going to be talking about Nearpod quite a bit. As you guys know, we've been very interested in EDGE protocols. We both read the books over the summer and we've been giving them a try in our classrooms. And obviously we're using Nearpod to do a lot of those tools. So we'll come back to some of these things during, you know, the course of this season. But if you have questions about using Nearpod or about something really cool, or if you have something with Nearpod that you're doing really sort of cool and interesting and you think might be worth sharing, we would love to shout you out on the podcast or answer that question in one of the episodes that is upcoming. So please go ahead and DM us, message us on Twitter, Facebook, how are all of the various ways that you get in touch with us if you would like to be shout out or if you have a particular question. But otherwise, guys, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Cyber Sisters podcast. Our next episode will be up on December 17th. We are going to have the return of one of our fan favorite guests talking about her new book, and we are super excited about it. In the meantime, keep in touch with us on our socials. We are at Allison Cade Teaches and at Settler Cyber, and we always appreciate keeping that conversation going. Please like, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, my friends, keep trying hard.